Good evening, Rabbi Yitzchak. I wanted to look, at least some of the time, maybe most of the time, at the part of the Haggadah that we rarely look at, and yet Tapi Chazal, it's the Iker of the Haggadah. You'd imagine, just for a moment, you took some great book, whatever it may be, and every year we opened it up and we read 25 pages of the introduction and we closed it. And we came back to it next year, we read the introduction again and we closed it. And for the next 50 years, well, we never read the book. To the largest extent, that's what happens with the Haggadah. If you'll note, I don't run all the schools in the world, but I do observe what takes place in them. And you'll notice that all the vertloch that the children have stop when we get up to Arami Yovid Ovi. Everything is until Arami Yovid Ovi. Maybe it's a little vort and Dayenu, that's it. You know, then by the Matzah come up again, but for once Arami Yovid Ovi, until we finish the drosh of Arami Yovid Ovi, that's it. Come out, not a word. Come out. And the actuality, Chazal tell us, that's the main body of the Haggadah. And the rest is really some of the mitzvahs that we have to do, an introductory material to Maggid. The Manash Tan is part of Maggid, etc. But the main body of Maggid is the Parsha of Arami Yovid Ovi. And there's almost no focus. There are a lot of reasons for it, but the reasons are not material. But the fact is that that's part of the Haggadah that gets short shrift. And there's a very startling insight that I saw. Rav Moshe Feinstein, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, had a nephew who lived here in the United States for a number of years. I don't know exactly when he came. I think he came after the war and he lived there a number of years. And then he went there to Yisrael and he became the son-in-law of Brisker Rav, Rabbi Chimechel Feinstein. One finds in Rav Moshe's forum in the early years in the 1950s that his nephew lived here in the United States with him. He was nifter in about the last year or so, about approximately the age of 96. A super goyim. He was described by those that knew him 40 and 50 years back that he could wake him up in the middle of the night and just start in the middle of his sleep discussing any tosis and shas with him. A goyim, an amazing goyim. And it's a very startling insight and something very, very simple in the Haggadah, but it really sets the tone for what we have to be sensitive to on the night of Pesach. V'aisais, Chazal tell us, zehamata. And he turns his attention to the pasuk, v'ayashlichu ish mateyu, v'ayu l'saninim, v'ayivla mateyara. We have principally matei Moshe, that's true. But here we have, at the beginning, we also have the matei Aaron. And what takes place, this is the first confrontation with Paro. Moshe Rabbeinu comes, and he wants to make the oasis, the signs in the presence of Paro to indicate that he's for real. He's not just some preacher that's coming, but he really represents the Rabbeinu Shalom. Now, Mitzrayim is the scene of this confrontation, the Mefarshim tell us, because Mitzrayim was, in ancient times, what the United States is today. It was the world's superpower. Militarily, it was the wealthiest country, it was the most educated and advanced country. And in Mitzrayim, Kishuv, and the Torah speaks openly of Kishuv. Kishuv exists, it's a reality. We may not know that reality of Kishuv, but Kishuv is something that's real. The Torah talks about it. The Khatum of Mitzrayim, what they were able to do. So, you know, as we say today, Lahavdul, if you made it or not, did you make it in the Big Apple? You know, the fact that you played in Peoria doesn't prove much. You know, if you can make it in the Big Apple, then you're something. We'll take note of you. And if the confrontation with Moshe Rabbeinu were taking place in a backwater, then before should tell us. So the sophisticates of Israel is a big deal, you know. This is a show for a little hick town, you know, some charlatan with his roadshow. You know, let him come on the world stage with the world-class performers, and we'll see what he could do. So the Rabbeinu Shalom, the place that the Rabbeinu Shalom will leave his mark in the world is in Mitzrayim, the most sophisticated of ancient societies, the most advanced. And if in Mitzrayim you can prevail, then you will have proven the manteda that the Rabbeinu Shalom is here. So Aaron comes, throws his matzah down, turns into a snake. Pretty impressive. But so Paro calls his people, and they also throw down their staffs, and they also emerge as snakes. So Paro, now we can match you step by step. So what are you all about? Kishuv? Mitzrayim, we know all about Kishuv. We're not impressed with such things. We have a whole house full of people that can do what you could do. So then the Pasuk tells us, very interesting, Vayivla Mate Aronis Mataisim. It doesn't say that the snake, the tanin of Aaron, swallowed all of them, their staffs. So Rashi tells us, Shechozu Benasa Mata. First, the snake of Aaron turned back into a staff, into a stick. And then Bola Eskulon, then it swallowed all of them. And Rabbi Mechel Feinstein Zatzal points out, if one stops to comprehend what truly took place, this was wondrous. That you can turn a staff into a snake, Paros, Mechashman, Chartumim were able to do that as well. But if Arites, snake could swallow their staff or their snakes, so that could be understandable. But that's not what happened. It turned back into a staff. Now it was just a staff, a stick, an inanimate object. Is it at all possible for an inanimate object to swallow other things? It's absolutely impossible. And yet, Paro was unmoved. He's not impressed with Moshe Rabbeinu. You made a tana, my chatumim also made a tana. So you were another Mechasha, so what? But if one dwells on the ice, one sees the reality of what took place, and it was very stunning. Because there's absolutely no explanation of how a mata could swallow other matas. Can't be. But yet, we are fascinated as human beings with superficiality. There was a Mephis by Aaron. The Mechashm of Mitzrayim also made a Mephis. That was enough to captivate Paro. To dwell on all the finer points and to see that the outcome, the end result, was truly stunning and amazing and totally inexplicable by any standard, that was pushed by the wayside. Because man has the capacity to be extremely superficial. He says, in the Yisoids, to properly comprehend the events of Yitzias Mitzrayim, to properly comprehend the relationship of HaKadosh Baruch Hu with Klal Yisrael throughout history, demands that we go beyond the superficial. That we examine very, very closely, with close analysis, that which took place. And once we do that, we will see that what goes on in the world, what goes on with Klal Yisrael, is like Korob Zelzeh. There's no point of comparison. The comparison is only at the most superficial level. Once we take events beyond that which is superficial, you enter a new realm. And this affects everything that he does in this world. How we view it, Yitzias Mitzrayim, how we act upon every occasion, stems from a totally different standpoint, which pushes all superficiality to the side. Vayishma Hashem es koleinu, the Haggadah says, for what reason? Vayishkar Elohim es brisoi es Avram es Yitzchak es Yaakov. In what schus did the Rabbeinu Shalom answer our tefillos? In the schus of the Ovis, in the bris that he made with the Ovis. He had promised the Ovis that will bring us to Mitzrayim. And he tells Avram Avinu, "Vagam es Hagoya asher yavodu don anoichi." He told Yaakov Avinu, "Anochi ha'alcho gam olay." Yaakov was afraid to go to Mitzrayim. The Baruch Shalom assures him, you will go to Mitzrayim. You will endure Mitzrayim, but will bring forth the Klal Yisrael from Mitzrayim. We were not worthy in Mitzrayim. Halolu oiv de avoy de zor, halolu oiv de avoy de zor. But we had tzchus ovis. Vayishkar alakim as brisa. The bris that the Rabbanu Shalom struck with the ovis. It's Avram, it's Yitzchak, it's Yaakov. And where do we find the principal bris? With Yaakov Avinu. A principal aspect of that bris is when he's running away from Esav. And he comes to the Mokum HaMikdash and he goes to sleep. And as the entire vision of the Sulamutz of Arzo, the whole flow of Jewish history, of all its difficulties, of the Meramas and the Dalet Golias, the four Malchius of the world, everything that's going to take place, it's all Nirmas in that dream. Yaakov Avinu wakes and there the Rebbe Shalom tells him, "Vashevu Sicha," and he'll be brought back to the land and you'll be able to make a Migdash. Things of his lifetime, things after his lifetime. And what does Yaakov Avinu say? He says, "Manoira Mokom Azeh, Ein Zekim Beis Elokim, Vezeh Shara Shamayim. Vanoichi Lo Yodati." I didn't know that. I didn't realize. And what happened if he did realize? So Rashi tells us, if he had realized that this was the Beis Hashem, he never would have gone to sleep. How could you go to sleep in the Beis Hashem? I came to the Mokom HaMikdash. I'm going to go to sleep in the Mokom HaMikdash. Inconceivable. Now what would have been the kind of what took place? He was at a very desperate moment in his life. He had to run away from his parents' home. He was pursued by Esav. He had, the only place that he had to go to was Beis Lovan. Not a very inviting place. He understood quite well he would face formidable challenges there. And along the road, he meets up with Eliphaz. So even the journey itself, besides all the trepidation of what was behind him and what was ahead of him, the journey itself was very perilous. It's such a desperate moment in his life, the Rabbanu Shalom comes, and the Rabbanu Shalom assures him, "I'm going to bring you back." Well, what person in a desperate moment in his life wouldn't give kol hoyin rav, everything and anything, for the sake of this dream? This dream of Nevuah that reassured him that he will survive the entire world around him. The world will not cave in upon him. The most phenomenal haftocha is the most critical moment of his life. And yet what does Yaakov Avinu say? If I had been makir, if I recognized that this is a Mokum Kodesh, I wouldn't have gone to sleep. If he hadn't gone to sleep, the whole Nevuah would never have come. He would have lived his life for the next 20 years with tremendous trepidation. Will he be consumed by Lavan? And we find his sense of anxiety was correct. Arami Oyved Ovi is that he did not even realize the peril in which he was in when he went to the house of Lavan. That Lavan actually plotted to kill him. This is not something that Yaakov Avinu saw. Arami Oyved Ovi. He wished to destroy him. Why doesn't he at the very end? Because the Rabbanu Shalom comes to him and tells him that to avoid mitoyva and ra, keep clear of Yaakov Avinu. But Lavan had it within himself of Arami Oyved Ovi to destroy him. And he's totally, he was unaware, but he sensed his anxiety was correct. And yet, he would have foregone all of that out of a sense of propriety of Yira of the Mokom HaMikdash. A people that could think in such a manner are not superficial people. It's a thought process, a profundity of in terms of our values, which is sharply different than anything we can imagine in the world around us. Could we imagine any politician on the face of this earth in a great and critical war for the defense of his country if he could achieve a reassurance that he'll survive the encounter? The country will finally emerge victorious from the challenge. What wouldn't he give for it? trade anything in the world. And yet Yaakov Avinu says, it's all meaningless. If it comes at the cost of failing to have the highest order of respect for the Migdash, it's not worth it. It's a person that lives in a different realm, not in the realm of these simple considerations of people. And as Chazal tell us, that the Baal Nes is often not makir his own nes. La'isin if lois levado ki li'olam chazda reshas tells us. The word levado is a very strange word. You know, we all know it's reminiscent of the famous marshal of the Dubna Magid, that the peasant is walking along the road with a heavy burden, and a wealthy man comes by with his wagon, with his coach, and he has Rachmanis on him, and he says, come up on the wagon. So he climbs up on the wagon, schleps his package up, he sits down on the back, and the Balagola whips the horses and they go forward. Half an hour later, the wealthy man turns around to see how his guest is doing, and he's sitting there with his heavy package on his shoulder. He's about to collapse under the weight. So he says, what's with you? You're on the wagon. Put the thing down. What are you breaking your back for? So he says, I wanted to help the horse. So the Dubna Magid says, you know, we think we're going to help the Rabbeinu Shalom in this world. We're helping him. With all our help, the Rabbeinu Shalom still is the one that schleps the wagon. Is lois and if lois levadai? Do we think we're the Rabbeinu Shalom's helpers? We have to say levadai? Dabar HaMelech didn't tell him we have to write lois and if lois levadai? None of us are the Rabbeinu Shalom's helpers. So the Gemara says, the fact that we are not his helpers, that's self-evident. But the Pasuk means to tell us is the cognitive awareness of the chesed, of the goodness of the Rabbeinu Shalom. Not only does he do it himself, obviously, but we remain often blissfully unaware of that which the Rabbeinu Shalom does for us. We can't even thank him for the chesed, because we didn't see it coming. We didn't see the problem, and we didn't see the resolution. The Rabbeinu Shalom saw the problem, the Rabbeinu Shalom provided the refuah, and we slept through the whole thing. Yaakov Avinu was Arami Yovid Ovi, and he slept through the entire encounter. He didn't realize it taking place. The Rabbeinu Shalom spears him. And this is true of much of Jewish history. This is what Rav Itzel of Volozhin meant. And I'm surprised, the fact that he had the courage to say it where he said is amazing. His son-in-law, Rav Chaim Volozhin, was asked once by a non-Jew why the Pasuk says in Tillim, Hallelu as Hashem kol goyim, shabchu kol ovim. Ki gavar aleinu chasda. The non-Jew should praise the Rabbeinu Shalom, ki gavar aleinu chasda, that the Rabbeinu Shalom has done chesed for us. And this was asked to him by a member of the Tsarist government. And Rav Itzel of Volozhin did not shrink back. And he told him, the pshat in the pasuk is very simple. He said, the Tsar and his accomplices are anti-Semites, as you well know. The evil which they conspire to perpetrate upon us in the government ministries day by day, he says, you know far better than we do. And yet, fortunately, most of your evil is not achieved. And therefore, who knows best? We can't even fully praise the Rabbeinu Shalom. Hallelu as Hashem kol goyim shabchu kol ha'umim. That you perceive more than we do, ki gavar aleinu chasdai. Because we don't know everything that takes place. In small things, which are sometimes imperceptible, lie the secret of our survival. The Pasuk reads, Vayera Yerusham, Klal Yisrael went there, and Vayoga, and we lived in Mitzrayim. So Chazal tell us, the Vayoga, as the Gaon explains, is in the wrong place in the Pasuk. It should have said, Vayera Yerusham, same Ma'at. We went there with small numbers, and then Vayogosham. Why does it say Vayered and Vayogar, and after that from Seimot? The Vayogar was after the fact that we were Vayered from Seimot, then we lived there, we dwelled there. So Chazal also cites clarity because they told Paralogur Ba'aretz Bonu, which confirms that the Vayogar means we've come to spend time in a place, not to become a Toshav, a citizen in that place. Now, what is the significance of that? Or what difference did it make if we came to Mitzrayim as citizens or we came to dwell there temporarily? What's the difference? And the Gaon is startling in his Perush on the Haggadah. Shim Hoysa Kavanoso Logur, if we had come there with the intention of settling in Mitzrayim, the Hoyu Yichaylim Lehigoyal, we would not have been able to be redeemed. A subtle difference. We lived in a country for 200 years. 200 years. And the difference between being redeemed from Mitzrayim and sinking in that gullus is one thing. Logo ba'aretz bonu. Because we had a mindset that was something other than Mitzrayim. Therefore, we put ourselves in a position that the Rabbanu Shalom could be goyalos. If we had accepted our lot as Mitzrayim, then we would have been totally unworthy of the Geula. That may be because if we ourselves long for the Geula, then we're worthy of the Geula. That's in a very simple sense. Profound as well, but simple, obvious. There's also the sense that if we don't accept ourselves as citizens, but rather logur ba'aretz bonu, we're here temporarily. We're not permanent residents of this country. That lends itself by yehi sham l'goy. What does the word goy mean in Tanakh? And the Gros says goy means, the meaning of goy, am is a collection of people that live in a particular place, that's am. Irrespective of what the deeds are, what their focus is, what the philosophy is, that's am. Goy, the Gros tells us, is that there's a particular culture that unites them. That's goy. And this is often a critique, in fact, of American society, that we are am and not goy. We are a collection of people that live in a geographic area, but in many regards, we don't have a common culture. We're a very unique place in the world in that regard. That we were unique in our morays. Why? Because we descended from Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. We could see unique aspects of Jewish values, even if a person strays from his roots. There's a way that a Yid thinks. The compassion that a Yid has is unknown in the world. We're the only ones in the world that can still be lamenting the fact that we're not more involved in the civil rights movement. And not that I'm not 100% in favor of civil rights, and we should not work for civil rights, and everyone deserves civil rights. But in the collective Jewish experience with the rise of anti-Semitism, which pushed us out of the civil rights movement, so we should be comfortable with the fact that we're not involved in it. We should do whatever we can that all people should share equal rights, but we're not intimately involved in it as we once were. That came about through reasons that are beyond our control. But Jews still lament the fact that we're not more involved in the movement today. Even though there are historical reasons that it's not possible in today's world, or make it very difficult for us collectively to be intimately involved as we once were in the process. Only Jews, you could have Jews in the world that could lament the fate of the Palestinians. There's no other people in the world where you find this. What's the reason for it? Because we are ultimately compassionate people. That any human being suffers, we find unacceptable. And we should find unacceptable. But the fact that there are reasons, perhaps, that we cannot necessarily be the ones to actively redress every grievance that does exist in the world, it's very hard for us to accept. Because the nature of Klal Yisrael is Rachmanim. We have compassion, and we should have compassion on all peoples of the world. It's the nature of Klal Yisrael. And as I say, I do not often like to quote Golda Meir. She was a person whose philosophy was very distant from mine. But there's one striking thing that she said in her life, which speaks volumes about Klal Yisrael. She said, there's one thing I do not forgive the Arabs, and that is that they have made our children murderers. It is only a descendant of Avraham, Yitzhak, and Yaakov that could speak that way. The tremendous value that we place on Torah, on human life, is so indelibly imprinted on the Jewish soul that a person as far from religion as she was, but cannot tolerate the fact that we should be cast in that situation, even against our will, that we have to take someone else's life. There are values that we have because we are goy. We have nimusim, particular values which are very Jewish, which are rooted in our entire existence, wherever we are in the spectrum. But they are historically part of Am Yisrael. And that comes if we realize, in fact, that we are a people apart. When we lose the sense of being a people apart, of being with Tzionim Sham, then we are in danger of adopting wholly the philosophy of the society in which we live. And losing, in fact, what makes us unique and distinct. So in little things, we make the difference. Things that are imperceptible. We come to a society, we wish to succeed in society, but what is our ultimate mindset? We're here permanently or temporarily? And therein lies the entire difference if we're zeicha to the gula or not. In the process of the gula, and I got perhaps from this a little nechama today, I have to tell you. Nechama for recent years, and nechama for events of the 20th century. We are never in a position to claim that we fathom the Dark Hashem, what the Rabbeinu Shalom wants at any point in history, what his purposes are, what his designs are, anything. And certainly not in very complex matters. But nevertheless, I found a certain nechama in the writings of the Gro on the Haggadah. Vayitnu aleinu avoda kosher. Why, in fact, was the avoda kosher placed upon us? And the Goyim writes, Kishirotza HaKadosh Baruch Hu Ligol Es Yisrael, when the Rabbeinu Shalom wishes to redeem us, Maher, and he wishes to bring it about quickly, so he wants to put things on fast forward. So, what he does is Vayitnu aleinu avoda kosher. He makes circumstances more difficult for us. And he says, V'zo'iko gram ha-gula. This is the principal factor which brings about the gula, which resolves the issue of golus. Meaning, oftentimes we are unworthy that the golus should be resolved immediately. We're not worthy of it. But the Rabbeinu Shalom puts us in difficult circumstances, and therefore we become worthy through those difficulties. And as I look back at events of the past number of years, Alad Masakayrish, as I think back to events of the Holocaust 50, 60 years back, the reasons for these things escape us, we do not know. And we're not in a position, barring the Vuah, to be able to offer insight into why they took place. But at least if we understand that through them, the process of the Geula becomes quickened. The Kates becomes closer and closer. So that's a partial Nechama. And the Dubna Magid writes this. The Dubna Magid writes that even after the advent of Mashiach, this is at the end in Emes Liakov, at the end of Chumash Bereishis, he has Chasimas HaSefer, and he writes a lengthy essay on the Novi and Yirmiyahu, on that capital, that chapter in Yirmiyahu. And he explains that even after Mashiach Tzidkenu comes, we will still not be b'menucha. Why is that? Because we will look back over Jewish history. Jewish history will be so hard to digest. All the difficulties that we went through. So even after they pass, we'll look back at Jewish history and we won't know a sense of menucha. We'll still be tormented and anguished over what took place in the past. So he says, then the Rabbeinu Shel Olam will come and will unveil the processes of history. And we will see that the Geula could not have taken place unless every single one of the difficulties that we experienced took place. These were necessary steps in the Geula. Then, the Dubna Magid says, we will come to understand, a sense, come to comprehend that which the Rabbeinu Shel Olam did, and that will give us a sense of Nechama. That's how difficult it is to digest Jewish history. And I've often said that's the meaning that we say, Allah Yeshua is Bala Nechamas. Yeshua and Nechama are conflicting ideas. Yeshua is a moment of triumph. Nicham is what we give to a person who's suffering. So how do we have one person that's Allah Yeshua is Bala Nechamas? But the Dubna Magid has explained, even after the Yeshua, we'll still need Nechama for all the difficulties that preceded it. And the Rabbeinu Shel Olam will let us in the secrets of history that will provide the Nechama. So even after the Yeshua, we still have to be Zoicha to Allah Nechamas. And that's what the Gaon has told us, that a window on understanding the processes of Jewish history, not the wise escape us. But the how, the mechanics of what takes place, that through these difficulties, the Geula draws ever closer. And therefore, although we wish, perhaps, that the process could take place without such difficulties, we don't know why they take place, but at least we have Nechama to know that some purpose has been served by them, some perceptible purpose has been served by them. And perhaps that's the answer to the riddle. It's an amazing riddle. The Gaon gives me now a new insight into it. That why is it that Klal Yisrael took possession of Eretz Yisrael in 1948? If we stop to think about it, if there's one point in history that it should not have been able to take place, that was exactly that. We were in 2,000 years at our weakest ebb. Physically, psychologically, economically. Tapped out people. In every regard, spiritually. There was not a weaker moment in our history since the Churban Beis HaMikdash. And yet at that moment, the Rabbeinu Shel Olam placed the gift of Eretz Yisrael in our hands. And perhaps the Gaon has given us insight into why. That through what took place in the Holocaust, as I said, the reasons for the Holocaust, I read the Novi and Yirmiyahu has taught me that one cannot know the reasons for such events. And I don't attempt to divine the reasons for such events. But the repercussions of such events that we can trace in history. And the Gaon tells us one of the repercussions of suffering is that it brings forward more quickly the Geula and its aftermath. And perhaps that's the historical juxtaposition of these two events, which are totally inexplicable. They do not fit together. There's no historical rhyme or reason for them. No person, if you wrote this as a novel, you would never write it this way. It would never sell. No one would believe the story. And yet that's the reality. And perhaps the Gaon has given us insight into that reality, why it is so. What we need to hope before the Rabbeinu Shel Olam is that the events of the last number of years are perhaps will have a similar repercussion. Jewish history is so mysterious and moves in such unexpected fashion that we can never anticipate that which is going to come next. It seems to fall from heaven, from nowhere. What we can hope before the Rabbeinu Shalom is that the anguish and the agony of the past few years is finally will bring in its wake the repercussion of the final resolution of our problems, of the advent of Mashiach Tzidkenu. That's what we need to hope before the Rabbeinu Shalom. I mean, the Goyin has given me nechama in that regard. Very striking words, which struck very, very dear to the heart of the Gro. The role of chesed in bringing forth the geula is very, very significant. The chazal and nachisu v'chazducha amzuda olto, the halt of olto on the veikotshecho, that in this, when Klal Yisrael saw that the geula was not taking place, so they were oisik and chesed with each other. And in that schus, the Rabbeinu Shalom redeemed us. The Gemara says in Shabbos, that one meaning of that pasuk is in agolius nigolim ela b'schus hatzdoka. Only in the schus of tzoka are we redeemed. And the Goyin is an amazing pshat. I mean, there are sometimes you see a pshat that you realize that there's no one else other than the Goyin that's going to say this pshat, such a pshat. The pasuk tells us, the Haggadah tells us, "Va'achar kein yotzu berachush godol." So listen carefully. He quotes Rashi. The pasuk states, "When Yisrael also kedvar Moshe, va'yishalu miMitzrayim klei chesed klei zov u'smolis, va'Hashem nosan aschena on bnei Mitzrayim v'yashilu." U'perish Rashi kedvar Moshe. Sha'omolahem b'mitzrayim, that told them, v'yishalu ish me'eis reyeyu. So what does Rashi say? The pasuk tells us specifically, v'yishalu osu kidvar Moshe, v'yishalu b'mitzrayim klechesev klechesev z'molos. We listen to Moshe Rabbeinu, we went to Mitzrayim, and we asked him to lend us gold items, and silver items, and nice clothing. Hashem nosan eschena on b'nei Mitzrayim, and Hashem gave us chen, grace in the eyes of Mitzrayim, v'yashilum, and they lent us these things. So along comes Rashi, kidvar Moshe, sh'om olev Mitzrayim, v'yishilum ish me'Yisrael. What does Rashi have to tell us? Ubnei Yisrael also kidvar Moshe. It says, b'furash, v'yish the doctor, the posik, it says, Ubnei Yisrael also, v'yishilum Mitzrayim, v'yish chesed, v'yish zav, v'yish smolov. It's Rashi trying to add to the posik. It specifically says this was the dvar Moshe. So the Goyin has an awesome shot. He says, but Rashi is coming, Rashi has a totally different kavanah than any of us ever imagined. He says, Rashi wants to know that pasuk, when Moshe Rabbeinu comes to Klal Yisrael, and he tells them, the Yishalu ish me'eis reyeyu. He says, Rashi has an awesome kasha on that pasuk. Who is that pasuk referring to? We believe it's referring to the Mitzrim. He says, but the Gemara says in Baba Kama, that when the Torah uses the word Re'eyu, it means specifically Jews and not non-Jews. So what's Pshat? V'yishalu ish me'eis Re'eyu. All of a sudden Mitzrayim became within the context of the word Re'eyu, and Shas tells us otherwise. Re'eyu means refers to Klal Yisrael and not to non-Jews. So what's the meaning of V'yishalu ish me'eis Re'eyu? So the Goyin tells us the Pshat is something entirely different. Moshe Rabbeinu came and told Klal Yisrael, "V'yishalu ish me'eis reyeyu." Do chesed for each other as Jews, one to another. Do chesed. If you will do chesed for each other, then you will merit that the Rabbeinu Shalom will give you chayin. Will give chayin. You will give you chayin b'nei Mitzrayim. And when you go to ask him for all of these things, you will succeed. In the absence of that chayin, you will not succeed. And how you achieve that chayin? Through chesed, v'yishalu ish me'eis reyeyu. Do chesed for each other. And that's what Rashi is telling us. How did this take place? Why? V'ashem nosan aschein ha'am? Bar Yishal also kidvar Moshe, not what's in this pasuk, but v'yishalu ish me'yisrayeyu. We should do chesed for each other. The chesed for each other is generated the fact that we were successful. V'yishalu That's why we succeeded. In the schutz of the chesed that the Rabbeinu Shalom asked us to do for each other. Totally different insight. A totally different way of looking at this parsha than we ever looked at it before. I guarantee this vote you'll share with anyone you blow that you knock their socks off. It's just, it's totally beyond anyone's conception. It's the Gra. The Gra, with his insights, opens a new page in understanding this Chazal, this Maimon Chazal. This also, from that we understand, there's another perspective on the significance of Moos Chitim. Why in Pesach Moos Chitim plays such a role? It's not only Tzedakah. Not only for that reason. The Zohar, in fact, is very strong on the point that we have to be Isaac and Tzedakah before every Chag. And we cannot properly fulfill Simchas HaChag unless we're Isaac and Tzedakah. And the Rambam records it in the Halacha as well in Hilchos Yontif. That if we were not Mesameach the Aniyim, then our entire Simcha before the Rabbeinu Shalom lacks any meaning and any spirituality whatsoever. And yet the Pesach is Moos Chitim. So according to the Gaon, it's because the chesed that we did for each other in Mitzrayim, the chesed v'chazdecham zuga alta, v'yishalu v'yish me'yesh v'yeyu, that chesed is what brought forth the gula. And according, I believe it's the Netziv, is yet another dimension to this. In Parshas Bo, read on Yontif, Mishchu Kulochem Tzoyin B'Shachatu Aposa. So the Mechilta writes, Mishchu Mishayeshlo, take hold, one that has, Ukhu, and obtain Mishayinlo, one that doesn't have. So he interprets this statement in the Mechilta in the following fashion. By and large, we can well understand that the Jews in Mitzrayim were impoverished under the circumstances of their servitude. But nevertheless, he says, there were some shvotim and some individuals that even in the circumstances of Mitzrayim were wily enough and given enough bracha by the Rabbeinu Shel Olam that they rose to wealth even under those circumstances. There were wealthy Jews in Mitzrayim too. A small number, but there were wealthy Jews. What Chazal are telling us is, Mishchu Mishayeshlo, if you're one of the well-heeled, and you have your own herds of animals, so just go and take one of your animals. But how will Klal Yisrael celebrate this Chag? What are the impoverished Jews to do? How will they celebrate the Korban Pesach? They don't own an animal. They have no means of obtaining an animal. It's Kru Mishaenlo. It's obtained from the wealthier, from the well-heeled. They will supply the animals for all of Klal Yisrael. And this was necessary to bring forth the Geula. The Rabbeinu Shalom says, "But Aaron ve'Aryo, we didn't have the schus with which to come out of Mitzrayim. The Rabbeinu Shalom wants to redeem us. But with what?" So the Rabbeinu Shalom gives us Bris Mila in Korban Pesach. And with those schusim, he takes us out of Mitzrayim. So how did the Geula take place? Through the Korban Pesach. And Korban Pesach only takes place through Moos Chitim. And I think Rabbi said that that's the meaning in the Haggadah. In that very curious passage in Holach Ma'anya. Kol dich bin yeseh v'yecho. Kol ditzchuch yeseh v'yipsa. So we know. Ever since we're children, we know the question. Kol ditzchuch yeseh v'yipsa. First of all, there's no Korban Pesach nowadays. Secondly, if there would be a Korban Pesach, it's too late to ask someone. In a Pesach nechal alam nuyav. You have to join a group before the shechita of the Korban Pesach. You can't just come at night and hook up with a group. So what altogether is the meaning of kol ditzrich yeisev yipsach? Kol dich bin yeisev yeicho amela. Somebody's hungry, I'll open the door and I'll invite you in for a meal. Tell you, that we could do. But kol ditzrich yeisev yipsach. But I think that the meaning is something else. Remember, the last two sentences In Holach Ma'an, you talk about where we are presently. And Lashon Abo will be Bnei Chayrin, Lashon Abo Ba'ara Yisrael. This line also has the same meaning. What we say before the Rabbeinu Shel Olam is, nowadays, how will we Makayim the Moschitim? It's called Dich Bin Yaisi V'Yechel, whether before Yantif, on Yantif, we look out for the needy amongst us. But we long for something else. We long to be Makayim the Moschitim in the initial form, and the way it was all the way back in Mitzrayim, but called Districh Yesev Yivsach. Next year we'll be in Yerushalayim. We'll be in Eretz Yisrael. And before Yontif we'll hang a different sign. Next to Kol Dich Ben Yesev Yecho, we're going to say Kol Districh Yesev Yivsach. If you need a Korban Pesach, come, we'll help you. That's what we asked the Rabbeinu Shel Olam. Now it's Kol Dich Ben Yesev Yecho. But we long that it should be Kol Districh Yesev Yivsach, as it was in the first Pesach, in Pesach Mitzrayim. And this perhaps explains this minig of Moschitim is called the minig of Moschitim is called the minig kodim, mentioned all the way in Yerushalmi. And perhaps this is where it stems from. It stems all the way back because Geulas Mitzrayim only took place through the institution of Moschitim. And thus we say before the Rabbeinu Shel Olam, Kol Dich Ben Yesev Yecho. Today that's all we can do. But we long for Kol Ditzrich Yesev Yivsach, that we should be able to invite people to share a Korban Pesach. Yeah, invite them not on Yom Tov, next year before Yom Tov, we'll invite them to join us. Thus, the chesed that the Rabbeinu Shel Olam asked of us, v'yishaluish me'yisrayeyu, within that chesed, within the vehicles of chesed that took place, are the very seeds of the first Geula. The lessons and the perspectives of Yitzias Mitzrayim are significant. For what reason? Because the Mefarshim tell us that the modes of how we sank into Golas and the mode of our redemption from that Golas to Geula are the same in every Golas. And thus the patterns which held true in Mitzrayim hold true throughout Jewish history. So when Chazal tell us that Logur Baaretz Bono, that we needed a mindset in Mitzrayim, and only by that were we worthy of the Geula, that this is not a permanent place. Logur Baaretz Bono, that tells us what our attitude has to be at every station in the Golus. Logur Baaretz Bono. When Chazal tell us that Chesed was at the heart of Geulas Mitzrayim, Chazal is teaching us that Chesed is at the heart. That's the key with which to open up the doors of the Geula in all the generations. Thus, we started at the beginning that the call of the Haggadah is to look beyond the superficial, to look more profoundly in an understanding of the relationship between HaKadosh Baruch Hu and Klal Yisrael, to look more profoundly of the significance of our relationship with each other, and to realize that within that attitude, within this what could often be a subtle difference between being Logu Baaretz Bono and Lishtakeya. Subtle matter shall believe. But it affects the totality of our relationship with the Rabbeinu Shel Olam. That the searching eye, the analytical eye, to truly understand the message of the Haggadah is very profound impact. It's very profound meaning. And how, in fact, it has to inform us in our own goals. That it's the essence of what the Parsha is about, the Parsha of Arami Ovid Ovi. Is to look beyond the obvious. Also, there's an obvious meaning to the Psukim. One can read the Psukim, the four or five Psukim in the Torah, a number of Psukim. One can read them very easily. We read them in laning, and in a minute we're gone. But then we only see the superficiality of the psukim and we see the superficiality of our own existence. As Chazal tell us, to truly understand the message of Pesach is to dwell on Aram Yovid Ovid, to see every aspect in its deepest sense what it means. And therein we will understand the mystery that is Klal Yisrael, the mystery of our survival, and the reality of our reaching and longing for the Rabbeinu Shel Olam to redeem us in contemporary times. Good night, Rabbi Yisrael. Achakosha v'sameach.